months. The four P's are prayer, the presence of God, prophecy, and now we're on to praise and worship. That's right. And we actually, we began our series on praise and worship last week. Those of you who were not here, my son Edward, Edward Cork, came and shared with us. And Ed is the worship pastor of a big student Anglican church in Cambridge. And he shared on how to pursue the greatest commandment. And the greatest commandment is, in fact, our verse of the year. In this church, we have a verse of the year, and we give out little bookmarks like that, and we put the verse on. That's the verse. Love the Lord with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. Matthew 22. And this, as Ed was sharing, this is the whole basis of God's covenant with us. What God is saying above all is this: I don't only want you to do things for me and achieve things for me, I want you to have a relationship with me. And Ed explained that this means that God cares how we respond in worship. He really cares about it. And he said that, well, Jesus says this is the first and greatest commandment. What does it mean to say it's the first commandment? Well, it's the first commandment because it's possible to allow good things, like family and church and work and hobbies and all that sort of thing, to take the place of the best thing, which is loving God. Okay? You can put really good things in the place of the best thing, but the first thing is to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And Ed encouraged us to ask ourselves, where in our stage in life are we finding that that good things are pushing out the best thing? And then he also said that it's the greatest commandment. Why does Jesus say it's the greatest commandment? It's because if we do this, then we will be great in the eyes of God. God says great people are not people who achieve lots of stuff, but people who love me passionately. Now, loving God means actually obeying God, as I explained. We need to obey what he says. If we can't call him Lord, Lord, and not do what he says. Okay, but actually, wholehearted obedience is only part of it. The other part is expressing a love for him. And the reason for that is it's possible, as Edward said, to obey God, but not really love him. You know, so it's important to speak out our love for him. It's really important. And when we do that, something changes. Somehow, God's presence and God's love for us becomes real. And Ed, who's a worship leader, sung worship leader, explained that the Bible says a key way of doing this is actually to sing our worship. Sung worship is really important. And he gave us a couple of tools to really make our worship mean something, which you can have a listen to. Go and it's on the website. Do have a listen to it. Well, this week, I want to pick up something that Ed alluded to last week. And it's this. Worship is a place, often the primary place, of personal transformation. When we worship God, we are transformed. And actually, much of what I'm going to say, I'll own up to you, I'm indebted to my son for this. So if you want to go on the Holy Trinity Cambridge website, you'll hear him saying all this much better than I'm going to say it. But anyway, you've got me. And we're going to look at the psalm that we just read together. So if you want to get Psalm 73 in front of you, we'll put some words up on the screen. But do have a look at the psalm, Psalm 73. And this psalm is like so many of the psalms. It's got stuff in it. And when you read it, you ask yourself, how did this stuff get in the Bible? I mean, how did these verses get there? What is it doing there? And the author is a guy called Asaph. And Asaph is the author of 12 of the psalms. And if you look in 1 Chronicles 15, he was one of the Levites, who was appointed as musicians. It says, appointed as musicians to make a joyful sound with musical instruments, lyres, harps, and cymbals. So we've got a full-time worship leader. He served in the Tabernacle of David, which was like the forerunner of the temple. And this guy, a full-time musician in the Lord's service, so you'd expect some good, positive, upbeat, God-focused stuff from him. And it starts really well. Surely God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. Can't argue with that, can you? The trouble is, after that, the psalm seems to take an absolute nosedive. And the next 15 verses are basically a complaining rant. And he's going, what's bugging this guy? Well, it seems he's come to worship, but he just can't focus because some stuff is really troubling him. It's all he could think about. He just can't get past it. This is what he says. As for me, my feet had almost slipped. I'd nearly lost my foothold. I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They're free from the common human burdens. They're not plagued by human ills. Therefore, pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. And it goes on for another 10 verses or so. And basically, the first half of this psalm is nothing to do with who God is at all. It's about what's going on inside Asaph's mind. Wonder if you've ever had that experience as you come to worship. Because I have. Sometimes I've got something in my head, something or someone has upset me, or I'm worried about something, or angry, or fearful. And every time I approach God, this thing kind of gets in the way. And however hard I try, I can't get through to the Lord. It's like an earworm, you know, one of those little songs that sticks in your brain all the time. But it's actually worse than that, because when we've got this, it completely distorts our reality. Look at verse 12. This is what the wicked are like. Always carefree. They go on amassing wealth. Well, for those of you who don't know me, I used to be a lawyer, and I've known a few wicked people in my time. I've acted for some of them. I've known a few wicked wealthy people in my time. Let me tell you, the one thing wicked and wealthy people are not usually is carefree. They just aren't carefree. But can you see how Asaph, focusing on the prosperity and the apparent success of the wicked and not focusing on who God is, totally distorts his view of reality? Can you see that happen? See how it works? Actually, Bill Johnson of Bethel Church in California says this. He says, everything outside the presence of God is subject to distortion. Everything outside the presence of God is subject to distortion. So what we got here is Asaph sounding off about the state of the world, but actually getting it totally wrong. And he's just not worshiping. He's the kind of his anger and his frustration is getting in the way of him approaching God. But hang on a second. This is just not me having a bad day. Okay. This is a worship song written in the Bible. Okay? Why did God allow it in there in the first place? Why does he let me read Asaph's mindless ramblings and frustrations? Because he cares about it. Because God cares about Asaph's mindless ramblings, even if he's wrong. Even if he's wrong. When we come to worship, first and foremost, God wants to hear what's on our mind. There is a school of thought which says, when you come to worship, you leave your baggage outside. Now, of course, there is a time and a place to say, I'm going to put these things to one side and I'm going to worship. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm choosing to put these things to one side and worship the Lord. Okay. But when we come to worship him, God actually wants to hear what's on our heart, even if it's skewed or bitter or wrong, because we matter to him, and what's in our hearts matters to God, even if it's skewed or bitter or wrong. You see? Because God's a God of reality. Look at Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. There he is, communing with his Father, seeking his face. What does he say? Well, Father, I know it's going to be a bit horrible over the next couple of days, but I know we've got it all sorted, and the salvation of the world is all in hand, and so let's just hang around enjoying the evening till Judas turns up and arrests me. He doesn't say that. He wrestles with God and says, Father, Father, could you take this cup away from me? Can you see? Real reality. He speaks out of reality. He brings his where he really is to the Lord. But of course, he gets through because he says, but Lord, not as I will, but as you will. I've told you some of about this before. In 2002, in my last church, we were going through an incredible crisis, the worst crisis I've ever been through in church life. And certainly the toughest time in my life as a Christian. And sometimes I go to a place called Hillfield Friary, which is near Dorchester, to see a friend of mine He's my spiritual director, if you know what I mean by that phrase. He's a Franciscan, Brother Philip Bartholomew. And actually, I was there last Thursday, as it happened, seeing him. But back in 2002, I'd gone to see Philip and spent a few days down there, and I was talking to him about all this stuff that was happening to our church. And I was complaining, Philip, how can God allow this to happen? And Philip, who is incredibly wise, said to me, out in the woods, there's a crucifix, a life-size crucifix. I think you should go out there and tell the Lord what you've just told me. So that's what I did. I went out to the woods. There's the crucifix, still there. Jesus hanging on the tree. And I stood in front of it, and it was like going before God physically. And I was seriously angry and upset. And I just stood there and I said, what the hell do you think you're doing? What the hell do you think you're doing? And all this stuff poured out of me. And as you can imagine, I really shed tears. And you know, the Lord can take that from us. He'd much rather we were honest with him than we sweep it under the carpet. Much rather. Because only then can he start speaking into our lives and correcting our perspective. Only then can the process of transformation begin, when we're honest with him about where we are. As my son Ed says, he says, bring your baggage to God. Sing your baggage. Sing your baggage to God. And maybe you come into church this morning and you don't feel like singing anything. Then don't. Just get before the Lord and tell him how you feel. Because even like if, like Asaph, you are totally wrong, the Lord cares about how you feel. But he doesn't allow us to stay there. And we can use worship, and especially actually sung worship, as a space to bring all this stuff to him and that let the Lord transform us. Because look, let's go back to the psalm. Here's Asaph struggling with all this. And suddenly he realizes, when I tried to understand all this, it was oppressive to me until I entered the sanctuary of God. It was oppressive to me. The message says this. It says, when I tried to figure it out, all I got was a splitting headache. I really like that, you know. It just, get, you know, he was getting nowhere. Until I entered the sanctuary of God. Until. Do you know what it is to have an until moment with the Lord? How you come in one way, you behold his majesty, and then you're changed. That's what happened to Asaph in verse 17. He beholds the beauty of the Lord, and his perspective totally changes. You can see that, because in verse 12 he says, this is what the wicked are like, carefree. Now, of course, that's not true. By verse 18, he realizes they're not carefree at all. Surely you place them on slippery ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly they are destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. He comes into the presence of God, and then he sees how life really is. And he also realizes who he really is before the Lord. Look at this. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, that's verses 1 to 15, okay? I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? And how does he turn around? He's turned around by spending time in the presence of God. He's turned around by spending time in the sanctuary of God. And what does that mean? It means we're in his presence. Verse 23. Yet I'm always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterwards you will take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is my strength and my portion forever. Here's a guy who's been envious of the wicked and the wealthy and complaining they had everything even though they weren't following God. And then in just a few moments of being in God's presence, he can say, who am I in heaven but you, and earth has nothing I desire besides you. I don't want all this wealth, I just want the Lord. Can you see how God turns his perspective completely on its head? And he's transformed. And what's changed his perspective is entering the sanctuary. In other words, becoming aware of the presence of God. Let me just unpack that a little bit, because we spent a long time, a lot of time talking about the presence of God in this year. Now, of course, we know that God is everywhere all the time. So what does it mean to enter the Lord's presence? Because surely we're always in his presence. Well, yeah, we are. But if you read the scriptures, there is a real sense that actually we can meet with God in special moments and in a special way. Now, back in the Old Testament, the Lord designed special places where he promised to meet with his people, the tabernacle in the desert and the temple. And the Bible talks about God dwelling in those places. Now, that's a bit crazy, isn't it? Because how could God live in a building? And actually, when Solomon dedicates the temple in 1 Kings, he says, Lord, I know that you don't live in a building made by human hands. Okay, that's what he says. But they still talk about God dwelling because there's a real sense of God being specially present, like he lives there. Okay, there's another verse in there's another phrase in verse 28. Have we got that one? No, I haven't got the one. I can show you that in a minute. In verse 28, it's Asaph says, "As for me, it's good to be near God." And James in the New Testament says, "Draw near to God, and he'll draw near to you." You see? Well, of course, we know that God is near us all the time. But there's a real sense that we come close to him. And then the Bible talks about magnifying the Lord. Magnifying the Lord. The Hebrew word for that means to make something grow up or get bigger. Well, how could me magnifying God, how could I make God bigger than he is already? Well, actually, that isn't the way that magnification works. When you look at the moon through a telescope, it doesn't get any bigger, but it seems bigger to us. We see the moon more clearly. Do you see? So when we magnify the Lord, he doesn't actually get any bigger because he's as big as he can possibly get and even bigger. All right? We just see him better. And in the process, we are transformed. But we need to make a choice. We need to make a choice to do this. It's a matter of the will. And if we rely on our feelings to draw us close to God, it's like we're a small sailing boat tossed around in a storm. What we need to do is come next to a great big tanker that will shelter us and, you know, take us into harbor. That's what we need to do. Okay. So we need to let him draw us in. We give our things to God. We let him minister to us in those feelings and then move us on so we get his perspective. And when we don't have these times of coming deliberately into God's presence and deliberately worshiping him and letting him transform us, we stay in Psalm 73, part A, all the time, the whole of our lives. And we've all been there. I don't know, maybe that's where you are this morning. But if we take time to enter God's presence, he transforms us. And here's the incredible thing. We don't have a temple anymore, okay? Because God lives where? In us. In us. But you know, this moment of choosing to move close to him and spend time with him in his presence is still his plan for us. This is 2 Corinthians 3. Now, says Paul, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. And we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. When we choose to come into God's presence and he is revealed to us, we are transformed. We see the world as it truly is. We see ourselves as we truly are. And just in case you think this worship is all about us, it isn't, because we see God as he truly is. The Lord is glorified. And we can have this anytime, anywhere. Isn't that astonishing? Anytime, anywhere. And every day, we need a new, fresh revelation of who God is. I'm not always all that good at this, I could be honest with you. But some people are. I think it's Mary here. Mary's not here. Oh, well, I can embarrass her then. That's great. One person in this church family who blesses me every time I meet here is Mary Fitzsimmons. Okay. And I was talking to Mary before I went on holiday, and I said, look, when I go on holiday, sometimes I find that I let my walk with God fade a bit. And it's not that I start doing terrible things, I'm falling away, but it means that I'm out of routine, and God is part of my routine, okay? And when I'm out of routine, he can get a bit squeezed out. And I was sharing this with Mary. She said, well, I just walk with the Lord all the time. You know, I get up with the Lord, and I walk with the Lord through the day, and I go to bed with the Lord. And minute by minute, she walks as the Lord directs her in an extraordinary way. And I know this. And as she goes through the town, she walks through the town, she speaks into the lives of the people she meets, and their lives are changed in an astonishing way. Astonishing way. But there's also something about God's people coming together like this to worship him and to behold his glory. And when, you know, the Lord is powerfully present as we worship. And when we behold him, we're transformed by him. Especially, I think, in sung worship, in his gathered people. Okay, and I don't know why God uses sung worship, actually. I don't know why. But I know that that is one of his chosen ways of doing it. In the tabernacle of David, there were 4,000 full-time musicians and 288 singers. It was important to God to have this amazing worship resource there. And under the new covenant, as the gathered people of God, we're being built into a temple. What does Peter say? As you come to him, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Worshipping together enables us not to have a good old praise up, you know. This is not a concert. You know, this is not a pop concert or a classical concert, depending on what kind of music you happen to like in church. Okay? It's an opportunity to enter the presence of God and see him as he truly is. And when we do that, when we speak to him, when we come as we are, he speaks back. And he gives us his perspective on whatever we brought to him and then moves us to where he wants us to be. Can you see how it works? It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. That's what worship does. So what I'd like to do is this. Pete and Sally, would you like to come up? We're going to have a time of sung worship now. And I don't know where you are this morning, but maybe some of us might be feeling a little bit like Asaph in verses 1 to 16, all right? A bit rubbish. And it might be that that is stopping you really worshipping. So what I'd like to do is, for the first song, to stay seated. Pete and Sarah are actually going to sing to us. And I just like to be in a kind of attitude of prayer. And do you remember what Edward said last week? He talked about writing around the card. What he said was, he said, when somebody brings a song, somebody else will have written the song, somebody else may be singing it. He said, when I get a card, what's important to me is not the pre-prepared message inside. It's what the person who sent the card has written around the edge, which really expresses their heart. So what I'd like you to do, I don't know, they're going to sing us a song. You might like this song, you might not like this song, doesn't matter. Forget the style, forget the song. Use the song as a springboard to express your heart to God. And you might be coming this morning saying, I feel rubbish. I feel upset. It's been a terrible week. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. This person's upset me. Okay? You might be saying that. If that's the case, say that to the Lord. Pour out your heart. And then what we're going to then do in the songs that Pete and Sally then lead us into is we're going to go into the presence of God. We're in his presence already, but we're going to acknowledge his presence. We're going to move further and further and further into the presence of God. And then what he'll do is he'll change our hearts and our perspectives, and he'll turn us more and more to be like Jesus, because that's what worship does. When you're in the presence of God, you can't help but be changed to be like Jesus. Can you see? Is that all right? Are you up for that? You kind of aware what we're doing, all right? So feel free, but if you've come with stuff, this is the moment to give it to the Lord, okay? Pete, Sally, lead us.